Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, March 24, 2017. The UN Secretary General challenges the Kiir administration to address the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan.
Despite the alarm sounded by the United Nations and international community over this crisis, the government has yet to express any meaningful concern or take any tangible steps to address the plight of its people. On the contrary, what we hear most often are denial, a refusal by the leadership to even acknowledge the crisis.
And JMAC chairman says the international community must act now to save South Sudanese.
And in the face of an ever-worsening situation, I believe that only a resolute and unified approach by IGAD, the African Union, the United Nations, and the international community as a whole can restore hope to the people of South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Secretary General has reiterated the need for effective leadership that prioritizes the needs of the South Sudanese people. Speaking during a briefing on South Sudan in New York yesterday, council members agreed the suffering of the South Sudanese people has become worse, but members are not all of the same mind when it comes to identifying the leading cause of the famine. Ayen Bior reports from Washington.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned Security Council members Thursday that the humanitarian crisis continues to deepen, that 100,000 South Sudanese are affected by famine, another 1 million are on the verge of famine, and more than 5 million may be severely food insecure by this summer.
Despite the alarm sounded by the United Nations and international community over this crisis, the government has yet to express any meaningful concern or take any tangible steps to address the plight of its people. On the contrary, what we hear most often are denials, a refusal by the leadership to even acknowledge the crisis or to fulfill its responsibilities to end it.
Ambassador Joseph Moam Majak Ngor Maluk, the UN representative from South Sudan, assured the council that his government would cooperate with the UN to resolve the issues affecting his country. He also claimed that changing weather patterns are largely to blame for South Sudan's food insecurity issues, while categorically denying his government purposefully starved certain people, leading to the famine in parts of a former unity state.
The government takes issue with accusation that it is responsible for it. It is also important to note that other parts of the country affected by drought as a result of climate change.
Russian Deputy UN Ambassador Peter Ilyachev agreed with Moam's assessment, telling the council that the famine was, quote, linked not just to problems with security, but also with inclement weather conditions, end quote. Michelle Sisson, the U.S. Deputy Permanent Representative to the UN, was quick to shoot down that assertion.
The famine is not a result of drought. It is the result of leaders more interested in political power and personal gain than in stopping violence and allowing humanitarian access.
Sisson says the South Sudanese government's continued and unconscionable impediments to humanitarians trying to reach famine-stricken populations may amount to deliberate starvation tactics. She told council members the option for an arms embargo is still on the table.
Our unanimously adopted sanctions resolution gives us the ability to designate individuals whose actions or policies threaten peace in South Sudan, including those who obstruct the activities of international peacekeeping or humanitarian missions, those whose actions or policies expand the conflict, and those who engage and targeting of civilians, including women and girls.
Boris Johnson, the United Kingdom's foreign secretary, told council members that just last month, the brutal cycle of raiding, retaliation, and counter-retaliation drove an estimated 80,000 people to flee their villages. He added that the hybrid court, as agreed to in the peace agreement, must be established so that those responsible for atrocities and other crimes can face justice.
And we should acknowledge that a terrible failure of political leadership lies behind the bloodshed. At every level, we must therefore place pressure on the leaders of South Sudan, both in government and in opposition, to act in the best interests of their people.
UN Women notes that the majority of South Sudan's displaced populations are made up of women, girls, and children. Betty Sunday, coordinator of the Women's Monthly Forum on Peace and Political Process on South Sudan, used her time to remind council members of the ongoing crimes committed against South Sudanese women.
If the peace agreement was implemented, women could go about their life without fear. Their children could go to school and they can collect food and intended to go to the garden.
Secretary General Guterres informed the council that the government continues to impede access to humanitarians delivering life-saving assistance, adding that the peace remains at a standstill. He said an inclusive political process is a crucial aspect to moving the country forward. As for the national dialogue, President Salva Kiir announced late last year, Guterres had this to say.
Credible dialogue cannot take place at the point of a gun. When civil society and opposition members cannot meet or speak freely, when a significant proportion of the population cannot participate in the discussions, and when numerous communities are displaced or facing starvation, dialogue efforts are unlikely to succeed.
In December, a U.S.-led resolution to implement an arms embargo on South Sudan failed to pass. Since then, reports say South Sudanese refugees have poured into neighboring countries as insecurity has spread to previously peaceful parts of South Sudan. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission also briefed the UN Security Council yesterday. Festus Mohai says there has been moderate progress in the implementation of the peace deal, but parties to the agreement are still not respecting the ceasefire signed in 2015.
The situation is slipping out of control. It is time now for the international community to condemn in the strongest possible terms the violence, the killings, the human rights abuses, and the destruction of homes. We must now stand together to do something about it.
The former president of Botswana says his office has received reports of fighting between government forces, rebels, and other armed groups in various parts of South Sudan. Aid agencies have reported serious attacks by government forces on civilians in Ler, Mayendid, and Wau Shiluk in the former Upper Nile state. Famine was declared in February in Ler and Mayendid counties. Mohai says government forces and rebels are actively fighting in Unity and Upper Nile areas.
The ceasefire and transitional security arrangement monitoring mechanism now report a deliberate planned conflict between the main parties to the agreement, the SPLA-IG and the SPLA-IO, loyal to Dr. Riek Machar, as well as other emerging armed groups, engage in the destruction of lives and communities in total violation of the ceasefire.
The JMAC chief says the recently declared famine is a direct result of insecurity, armed violence, and political exclusion from the peace process. He says peace can still come to South Sudan if South Sudanese see their interests being addressed by their leaders. He says the international community has a role to play in avoiding complete disaster in South Sudan.
We must urgently look again at all possible practical measures that we can take to alleviate the desperate suffering that millions of people are facing every day. And all parties to the agreement are failing in their basic duty to protect the South Sudanese people.
Mohai says there is no progress in the implementation of Chapter 5 of the peace deal, which calls for institutional reforms. He also says he is yet to hear from the African Union on the progress of the establishment of a hybrid court for South Sudan. He says collective efforts are needed urgently to address the deteriorating situation in South Sudan.
And in the face of an ever-worsening situation, I believe that only a resolute and unified approach by IGAD, the African Union, the United Nations, and the international community as a whole can restore hope to the people of South Sudan.
Last month, South Sudanese legal expert in human rights, Remember Miamingi, told South Sudan in Focus that JMAC chairman Festus Mohai failed to monitor the violation of 2015 peace agreement. Miamingi and other South Sudanese activists on social media said Mohai must leave the country. We asked South Sudanese on the streets of Juba last week about their expectations on JMAC's work.
What I wanted JMAC to do for people of South Sudan, JMAC will stand up for people of South Sudan. I'm looking at JMEC like they have not been active in doing most of their work. Basically, I can take example of the ECOWAS. What they did for Gambia, it was really very good.
Okay, me as a citizen of South Sudan, I've really failed to understand the role of JMEC in the implementation of the peace agreement. Because since the crisis started in 2013, they have been promising people, holding meetings, agreements, but there is nothing as a citizen. What I'm seeing, there is no improvement. People are dying every day.
Okay, my name is Richard. It's really so unfortunate that our brothers and sisters in some areas are dying of hunger. So the most important thing is to have peace back in South Sudan, and I think that's what JMEC should emphasize on.
What I really would like JMEC to do is that the peace processes that are going, but no one is following it up. You see, we really want to see if it is heading this side. Which level has it reached? What is making it sick or wounded or dead? So that we can really get a result to all this crisis we are in. That is what I'm not saying. Because if it is really doing it, at least everyone will be having very confident that, yes, we are now at this stage. And now we are at this stage. But now no one is confident about what is happening.
My name is Adonwe Daniel Alit. I would like to really ask JMEC so that they continue engaging the parties to the peace agreement, so that peace agreement has to be implemented and people, the society should get peace.
I want JMEC to take its full responsibility, its full mandate. They should really engage in what they have actually been assigned to do. And basically, to be consistent to see that the implementation of the peace agreement is fully implemented. And one of the most important things that I expect JMEC to do is also to get down to the grassroots and see what is happening in regards to human rights violations. We need the monitoring of human rights violations to be done and investigated, as well also we need to be updated as citizens to know what is happening in regards to the human rights violations, because this is the ongoing challenge which is facing our citizens.
My name is Kamis Cosmas, and my emphasis to JMEC work in South Sudan is specifically in regards to the implementation of the peace agreement. We know that JMEC is a key partner to the two warring parties in South Sudan, and as a citizen of South Sudan, I hope that JMEC will at least follow up the implementation of the peace agreement in regards to the two partners. At least they need to make sure that the two partners has to, if possible, come together again and sit and renegotiate what are the vacuum that are really taking this country backward.
My name is Mori. I'm in Gudele 1. I basically want to see that JMEC engage the two partners really to implement the peace as it is in the peace contract. There is a continuous proclaiming that the peace is being implemented. But we really don't see as citizens that the peace is being implemented as it is stipulated. We really want to see that JMEC come out to say that the peace should be implemented in its systematic way.
Titus from the Roots Project. What I want JMEC to do for the people of South Sudan is just to come and see what is on ground and then report exactly what they see. Say that the world outside there can know what is going on exactly in South Sudan. Yeah, I want them to tell the world what is going on in South Sudan and tell them exactly the truth.
Those voices of South Sudanese on the streets of Juba expressing their expectations on the work of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission. Our reporter Mungume Debs Rakarinj collected that audio in Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan on The Voice of America. Coming up next, a nightclub ban in one area of South Sudan. Find out where and why when we come back. A member of the National Dialogue Secretariat says the Kiir administration must release all political prisoners as a gesture of goodwill during the proposed national dialogue. Jock Madud Jock, founder of the Juba-based Saad Institute, says the government should also end media censorship to allow journalists to report freely about the issues that matter to the South Sudanese people. He says the country is divided along ethnic lines, and any restriction on the work of the media could make matters worse.
And you are completely right that people are polarized to the point where there's not as much trust as we had in 2011 when we became independent. And because of that polarization, every utterance from one person will be read automatically with the ethnic lens, and that mistrust is prevalent all across the country. This is the reason why we need national dialogue, so that we can begin to step back from the brink, from the cliff that we are staring into, because otherwise South Sudan is going to collapse, and when it collapses, it will collapse on all of us. Perpetrator or victim, the collapse of South Sudan will not be beneficial to anyone.
But how about the situation of those who have been detained from 2013 to date for various reasons by the government? And they are still in detention. Some of them are politicians. And my understanding is if you're opening a new page, you also need to release these people so that they are part of the solution.
Indeed. I think there is no question about a degree of impunity that has gone on in the country. Some politicians who have been in detention without trial for 7 months, year, 2 years since 2013, there is just no need for them to continue to be detained. And detainees of conscience, which means anybody who was arrested for their political views should be released. And that did not happen, and I think there is room now to continue to push for their release. This is what many civil society groups, including our own institute, are gearing up to bring these cases to the presidency and to the national security and say, look, if you don't have any case against this person, you should release them, especially if you want to really go by the spirit of national dialogue, which the president has just announced. Otherwise, the national dialogue loses the meaning.
And you were saying that this national dialogue should have its own media so that it can broadcast its proceedings. But this is also an environment where government operatives are very hostile to the media. In fact, most radio stations in Juba are now only reporting what the government is saying. They're not allowed to report what the rebels are saying. How does that play into a situation where people are opening up their hearts?
John, I think you know full well that the government, by their very nature, don't do right by the citizen on their own account. What governments do is what the citizens demand. And so despite the hostility of the political climate and the hostility toward the independent media and the hostility toward rights of expression, I think it is not possible for us to sit down and say, okay, the government doesn't want us to speak and so we fold our hands and sit down. No, I think there has to be a continued push, yes, with a price, no doubt. But nobody said that freedom can be attained without a price. And so, yes, you're right. This environment is going to be difficult, but I think it is important to keep pushing. So I say that if the government doesn't allow a transparent media access to the dialogue, then the dialogue is dead. And therefore, the blame will go on the shoulders of the people who announced, and we will have tested the sincerity of the government by saying, let us announce everything that has been said by South Sudanese. What if the ultimate resolution of the dialogue is a call for a major overhaul of the political system in our country? What if that was the case? Then the political leaders will have a choice. Either they implement it or they swallow their own words and go back on their call for national dialogue. And that the whole world will have seen that this process was not a genuine process to begin with.
That's Jock Madu Jock, founder of the SAD Institute. He was speaking to me from New York on Monday this week. The South Sudan government will likely reduce staff in its diplomatic missions around the world in upcoming days, as it hasn't paid staff salaries or rent in several months. A Foreign Affairs Ministry spokesman says ministry officials hope to make back payment within a month. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Ambassador Maiwen Makol Arik says even though all of the South Sudan's 29 embassies across the globe are operating, the government has not paid the salaries of personnel, rental fees, or other operational costs because of the country's economic crisis. Makol confirms that owners of the buildings where some South Sudanese embassies are located have given the government an ultimatum to pay or have their staff evicted.
There are some notices of a threat, but not closed down, you know. And so we don't want to go to that stage where they can be closed down. You know, it is the responsibility of a country to maintain embassies abroad.
A reliable source within the South Sudan Foreign Service, who does not want to be identified for fear of the government backlash, told this program that South Sudan embassies in the UK, Italy, Norway, Turkey and Nigeria have all been closed because the missions there could not afford to pay rent. Ambassador McCall says the country's financial crisis affects operations at all of its foreign missions equally. He says, despite South Sudan's non-payments, it is still in a good standing with all host countries.
There has not been no reaction from all these host countries. We are just dealing with individuals that we are dealing with them in terms of rent, whether it is apartments of the diplomats or the chanceries and the residence of the ambassadors.
Despite South Sudan's economic situation, as fighting continues in the parts of the country, McCall claims Juba plans to open more diplomatic missions in other countries. He says the government will reduce the number of staff in its current embassies to cut costs.
We're trying to increase the number of embassies. A lot of countries want us to be with them. And so this also requires us to be very careful in terms of how we can open more embassies and trying to with the budget that we have. That's why reduction of the staff was important.
McCall did not say how many new diplomatic missions Juba plans to open. In a related development, McCall says South Sudan has been accepted into the regional East African community and will have to pay $8 million for its membership fee. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Yei River County officials have banned teenagers from attending nightclubs in the area. The county commissioner says the new order is aimed at ensuring children attend school and to prevent teenage pregnancies. Teenagers say they go to nightclubs to sing and dance. Daniel Friday, Martin has more for VOA from Yei.
Yei River County Commissioner Dennis Lasova, who issued the order last week, says education and health officials informed him that school dropouts rates are high as a new HIV infections among teenagers, and they contribute that in part to the popularity of nightclubs among teenagers. They say oftentimes teenagers end up having sex after meeting at local nightclubs. Lasova says club owners who allow teenagers to frequent their establishments will be fined a minimum of 5,000 South Sudanese pounds or be imprisoned for up to 3 months.
Any club owner who contravene or fail to comply with the provisions of this order shall be liable to a fine no less than 5,000 SSP. That alone goes with an imprisonment for a term no less than 3 months. And any parent or guardian who of the underage boy or girl who does not comply with the provisions of this order also shall be liable to a fine of less than 5,000 SSP. We'll also see to it that our local authorities, besides the police, are expected to execute this order.
Lasuba is calling on traditional chiefs and police in the area to implement the directive. Aule Ezio, chairperson of the Yei Music Association, welcomes the order, but says it's important that the new order be enforced.
The security people who stay at the door to ensure security is okay, they should be the ones to control, and the order should be given to them not to allow young girls to enter into the clubs. We are going to work also in accordance with that order. When we see it is a bit getting violated, we will come back and remind the government so that we save our girls, not only girls, even boys. Because when you go to night discos, you are supposed to be matured enough.
Aule says state officials have issued orders many times in the past, but implementing such orders remains a challenge. A parent, Richard Baba, urges residents to talk to their children about the importance of getting a good education and the dangers of risky behavior such as engaging in sex.
It is a concern of the parent to look after the child so that the child will know his or her future. You know, when you go to disco places, you will get harm, you will get HIV, AIDS. Whenever an order is issued like that, there is a need for us to follow.
16-year-old Rina Keji says she's fine with the order, but urges counts in the state officials to provide a favorable learning environment if they want teenagers to stop spending their evenings at these schools.
The government has to provide enough food in the school such that pupils may be attracted to come to school, and then like to provide some ecolastic materials like the books, the pens and the bags for the pupils such that they stop moving to disco. Some of the boys and the girls, they go and they perform on stage such that they can get money to pay their school fees and to buy some ecolastic materials.
17-year-old David Abbas says the government should set up more security so that children and teenagers feel safe going to school.
It is good because if the government provides security, it makes pupils be confident to go to school.
And David says parents must pay school fees so that kids don't have to go to clubs to dance and sing for money. He says parents will also make their children feel good about attending school. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday-Martin in EA.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Sudan Mujahja by Gordon Kong. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here with us. We look forward to meeting you next week on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yeah.